Lesson 2, Bitcoin and Economics, Part E, Speculation, What It Takes.
Okay, so last session we talked about what speculation is and that it is the brutally difficult task of predicting the future, but we only have to do it better than random chance to be successful at it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to take a little bit of time to analyze and to break that task down further, right? If you can think clearly about all of the different steps involved in building a house goes from magic to technology, right? Which is where we're trying to go. So one of the things that you have to do when you're trying to predict future prices is because prices are a result of human decisions, you have to think about what are the circumstances that people are going to be in the future? What problems will they be faced with? If you know that there's going to be a lot of people that live in a certain neighborhood that have a certain amount of income, you're going to be able to predict the problems that they're facing, right? So let's say that that you know that there's this professional neighborhood that's being built, lots of condos, whatever, office park, and you know there's not a coffee shop around. Well, what are some problems that future humans are going to be faced with? They're going to be faced with the fact that they have to drive 10 minutes to get a cup of coffee, right? So they want coffee. What tools they have available to fix those problems? Well, right now they have a coffee shop 10 miles away, but you are thinking, well, maybe you're going to be able to give them a better tool, right? A coffee shop that's 2 miles away. So trying to just think through this in a very logical way takes away some of the mysticism, right? And makes things like, technical analysis, I think, a little bit more obviously nonsense or the idea of giving somebody else your money and having them throw it in a mutual fund or just blindly throwing money at your 401k and thinking that you're a wise investor. I think when you understand what speculation is and that it involves predicting the future and we can break it down into these separate steps, hopefully you'll be asking yourself, wait a minute, if I'm not doing these steps and these are what this is about, right? And I'm not earning interest and it's not labor, something's fishy, right? And it is. So predicting future human circumstances is an essential element of clear thinking when it comes to speculation. But that's not enough. You also have to think about future human values. What are humans going to value in the future? What matters to them, right? So let's think about that professional neighborhood that's being built. Now, if we were at a time 70 years ago and we were predicting what people would want, somebody might say, hey, you know, we should set up a daycare, right? Because these professionals that live in this neighborhood, they're going to want to drop their kids off when they're heading to work and then come home and get them at night. And Montessori is really hot right now. So let's do a Montessori school, right? And we'll start at ages, 3 and go to age 8. If you said that 70 years ago in the United States, there'd be a lot of kind of confused looks, right? Because the answer would be, wait a minute, that doesn't reflect our values, right? We assume that women are going to stay home and watch children, right? The reason that we have this nice neighborhood that all these professionals are in is because the husband is expected to get a well-paying job and go work, and the wife is expected to stay home with the children and raise the children. And that would be a circumstance if you were speculating and you set up a daycare 70 years ago, or if you bought a daycare that was operating and you thought that you were going to see a big increase in the amount of traffic or the amount of clientele that you had because there was a professional, the neighborhood was about to become more professional, you would be wrong. And you wouldn't be wrong because you misjudged the problems that these humans are going to be facing in, a year when the neighborhood is built. You'd be wrong because you misjudged their values, right? they could solve the problem of childcare by putting kids in daycare, but they could also solve the problem of childcare by having a spouse stay at home and raise the children. And you have to know what these people's values are to know what they're going to do. So when you're trying to predict future prices, you need to predict the circumstances that these people are going to be placed in. And you also need to predict their values and what tools they're going to have available to fix those problems are going to be selected based on their values. And I think that story illustrates that. The other thing you have to think about is how much do those values vary between people, right? Right now, the opposite is true. Like most people value putting children in daycare from a pretty young age. I think maybe 3 or 4 is typical in the United States right now, and having both spouses work. But there was a transitional period, right, where I couldn't have told you what most people would choose. And something like daycare, it's pretty binary, right? Like you either like it and both spouses work, or you don't like it and one person stays home. But there's all kinds of other things that could vary quite a bit, right? So if you have a coffee shop, how many people that walk through the door really just want a friendly face? How many people want a specific type of drink? How many people have a specific allergy, right? So trying to figure out what problems people are going to be facing and what they value, you also have to figure out how much those values vary. And are those values likely to be the same in the future, right? Are they going to change? If they're not going to change, then it's a little bit easier to predict. But if it seems like you're trying to catch a trend, you know, you're about to set up a bunch of Montessori schools in San Francisco, it's going to be a little trickier, but there's a greater reward probably there as well to go along with the risk that you're predicting those changes in human values correctly. So future human choices is what we're trying to predict, right? Because that is reflected in the price. And so you got to figure out what the given the circumstances, right? And the values that you expect these people to have, then you're able to be in a position to figure out what choices they're going to make. And then that is how you predict future prices. So it's not easy, but once you know what people are going to do, you can associate that with price, right? If you know that the typical price for daycare is, I don't know, $42 a day, it is very much possible to say there's going to be a lot more people in this neighborhood that are financially well off that are going to need that service. So I predict based on that, that if it has been historically $42 a day, that it's going to go up. But you have to have, you know, the historical prices, but they have to be armed with your theory of future human action, right? And you have to have everything that we just walked through in order to make an informed guess about how prices are going to be affected. If you don't do that, you're not going to be successful. It's guaranteed. If you do all of those tasks, but you don't do them carefully and systematically, that's fine. You can still be successful. Not everybody that has made an investment decision has had to stop and specifically ask themselves if the values that humans have are going to change over this period of time. But it's still a good idea to be aware of the different mechanisms involved, right? The different things that are going to affect the success so that you can decide which ones can be quickly skipped over. Like, for example, you don't really have to consider whether mothers are still going to love their children in 6 months, right? That's probably not necessary, but this is a really hard task. Predicting future prices isn't easy. So at least teasing out those different mechanisms can help you think more clearly about it. Okay, so we've talked about how difficult it is to do speculation because you have to predict future prices. And we've talked about some of the ways that you can tease apart building that house into the foundation and the roof and the different components, which are you have to predict people's future values. You have to predict the circumstances that they're going to be placed in. then you can predict the choices that they're going to make. And then you can talk about how those choices, or you can more clearly predict how those choices that you believe they're going to make are going to affect the price of goods. But that's not good enough. Even if you do all of those things, and even if you're right, you're still not going to be a successful speculator. And that is because unless you have secret knowledge, none of it matters, right? If you go to somebody that has a coffee shop, and that coffee shop owner says, hey, you should buy my coffee shop because there's this new building that's coming in and it's going to have all of these professionals and they're going to demand coffee more. And therefore my my revenue right now, you know, my annual profits right now are only $10,000, but they're going to go up to $25,000 after this thing is built. There's no opportunity there, right? The future demand of this good is already priced in. Because he's not going to sell you the coffee shop based on current revenues. He's going to sell you the coffee shop based on current and future expected revenues. The opportunity comes if you're the only person that knows the office building is going in, and then you go and you buy the coffee shop, right? So unless you have secret knowledge, and this is the thing that if there's one thing that that I want you to walk away understanding about speculation, it is this. If you do not have secret knowledge, you do not have an opportunity to make money. If you're looking at the same trading charts as everybody else, and you are looking at the same prospectus on Microsoft and Amazon and Google and AT&T or whatever, if you're looking at the same data as everybody else, there's no secret knowledge, you have no special insight, you have no opportunity to make money through speculation. That is an economic truth that I can prove to you in as much detail as I can prove to you that 2 + 2 = 4. And if you accept that, then you kind of walk into a bigger world in a bunch of ways. There's a couple different ways you can think about this. One is that your competition already beat you to the problem and you have nothing to solve, right? So let's say that you walk into the coffee shop and you have this conversation. What you would immediately realize is that the guy that owns the coffee shop, he already knows that there's going to be increased demand for coffee, right? So he's already planning to bring in more staff. He's already planning to, you know, maybe update the facade to appeal to the new crowd, whatever it is. There is no opportunity because there's no problem for you to solve, right? A simpler example is, let's say that you discover that the price of potatoes is going to go up in the future by 30%. That's because there's, you know, blight is coming into the area, right? The demand is going to remain the same, but the supply is going to go down. You think about it, you run some very simple math, no crazy equations or anything. And you realize that you think the price is going to go up probably 30% on potatoes. Now, if you're the only one that has that knowledge, you can profit because you can buy potatoes now and then you can sell them later when they go up. But what if everybody else already knows that? If everybody knows that blight's coming to the area, then everybody else is going to value the potatoes that they have right now more because they're going to be more valuable in the future. Now, they might not value them 30% more because maybe there's costs, right? There's the fact they'd rather have their money now, right, than have it later. So there's sort of an interest element to it. There's also the fact that they have to store the potatoes, right? And there's, let's say, storage costs associated with that. And labor costs associated with storing the potatoes and then selling them later. So maybe they're not going to increase the price of the potato by 30%. They're only going to increase the price of the potato by 20%. And you would look at that and you might think, well, that's a 10% margin. There's money to be made there. But no, there isn't. And I can tell you there isn't, at least not from a speculation standpoint, by definition, because everybody already knows the same thing you know. And that 10% must therefore represent a combination of other costs, labor, and interest. So even if you can predict the future, you have to predict the future better than the market, right? Better than everybody else, or there's no opportunity to solve a problem. You can think of this in the time versus space thing as there's already, you know, you hear that the neighborhood a couple miles away or a couple towns away is buying milk for 40% more than your neighborhood, right? Maybe your neighborhood is in the middle of a good country for dairy cows, right? And you decide that you're going to travel over there. If you and everybody else knows that, then you're probably going to look out your window and you're going to see trucks already on the road, right? If you're the last person to find out that the town or the town, a few towns over has a demand for milk that's resulting in milk being sold for a premium, it's probably too late to do anything about it if you're the last person to find out, right? It's the same thing with speculation. If you are the last person to find out that the price of the potato is going to go up, the fact that the price of potatoes is going to go up is already built into the current price. So it's as if you looked out and you saw there are already trucks on the road, right? There are already people that are solving that problem by taking potatoes off the market now, storing them and transporting them through time to deliver them into the future. So there's nothing for you to do. Just go home. Okay, so you might be thinking at this point, this is really hard. And it is. It is really, really hard. You have to predict the future. You have to predict the future better than everybody else. And that's not easy. And when we look at how intense your competition is, I think it'll make it even more obvious that this is a very, very difficult task. Because you are competing and you have to predict the future better than everybody else, but you're competing with the smartest people in the world, right? The smartest people in our society tend to end up doing speculation. And part of the reason for that is that dumb people don't last long in this business. You could be a poor plumber, right? And it's going to take a long time before everybody realizes that you're not very good at your job, right? You'd have callbacks, you'd have leaks, you'd have all these other things, but it might take quite a while for your reputation to actually cut down on the amount of business that you get. And it's sloppy. So you may end up getting more business because you're a bad plumber, because you get, you know, more service calls. But that's not how it works in speculation. Speculation is really, really cutthroat and immediate. The market is a very brutal, efficient, and clear manager. So dumb people don't last long doing speculation. They go broke. Your competition is also very focused. They know that the very smallest insight can make them win big, right? They know that if the price of oil is going to be affected because of a conflict between a couple families in Qatar, that can make them millions and millions of dollars. And because they know that, they know where to focus, right? They practice and they know where to find this information. And they're also very, very motivated, right? There's nothing more motivating than immediate rewards, right? If you have a kid and he does something bad and you punish them 2 weeks later for it, it doesn't have the same effect as if you punish them immediately. And the same thing is true for us. If you do something great and you immediately get a bonus for it, that's going to be a more powerful reward than if you have to wait for your next review 9 months later. Because of the way that our brains work, right? Immediate rewards and punishments have a bigger impact on our behavior than those that are mediated by a bunch of time. And these people that you're competing with in speculation, they get that. They get immediate rewards and punishments because if they make a good decision, as soon as they know that it was a good decision, they know they made money and vice versa. They're also very specialized. So, crude oil investors, you know, there's crude oil investors out there that they only get involved in a certain set of circumstances, right? They know that if there's a storm in a particular place and there's a certain geopolitical crisis going on, that's the moment that they're going to get involved. Otherwise, they'll just sit out the game, right? They don't have to be invested all the time. They can just wait for that one circumstance where they know that they can predict the future better than random chance and better than the competition. And that's when they go. So these games are not easy to win, right? And the competitors are very, very good. They're also corrupt. You know, if you are aware of how economics works and you know that the only way that you can make money as a speculator is with inside knowledge, that makes the whole idea of insider trading pretty interesting, right? How can you make money off of Microsoft stock? You could know that their next product is going to be awesome. If everybody else knows that their next product is going to be awesome, it's already priced in. You could know that there's going to be a management change because the CEO is getting removed from the board and he's been a very popular CEO. So that's probably going to tank the price. But then again, if everybody else already knows that, if everybody else already knows there's probably going to be a management change, there's no opportunity to profit. But what if you're friends with that guy? What if you're friends with the CEO and he tells you at a dinner party that they're really having a hard time with their new product and they haven't told the board yet? Then there's some opportunity to make money. So the whole idea of insider trading actually being illegal is really just nonsensical once you understand what speculation is. If you don't have secret knowledge, you can't profit. But the law says that if you have secret knowledge, you'll go to jail if you profit. Those are the kind of circumstances where if you're clear thinking, you realize that the law is not designed to prevent that problem. It's probably designed to put somebody else in a better position. So if you are a very good investor, you need to keep in mind that if your competition gets pissed off at you and they're politically connected, you could go to jail for insider trading. Here's some other things about your competition. They're powerful, and not just powerful as far as corruption goes. They're also powerful in the sense that they often have a lot of money. And that means that they have a lot of economic resources at their disposal to solve problems for them, to get work done. So they can pay somebody to research a very specific thing. They can have somebody on staff that does nothing but watches the Facebook account of the Prince of Qatar, right? That's not corrupt, right? They're doing their job as a speculator. They're trying to understand the world and solve problems and transport goods to people that are going to want them more. And if they have, if they've been successful at that and they have a bunch of economic resources at their disposal because they've been successful, that's great because they're making the world a better place for all of us. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be easy to compete with. And in fact, the better that they are at their job, the more powerful they are as far as being able to influence the allocation of economic resources. It's all good, but it's hard to compete with them. They're scalable, right? So let's say that they find out something about the future price of oil. This is not like competing with another plumber a couple towns over, right? If there's a plumber a few towns away, or even a plumber in your own town, they can only unclog so many pipes at the same time, right? If you're a software developer, you can only write so much code at the same time. But if you're a speculator and you have a piece of information, you can scale up your ability to leverage that information almost infinitely. And if you're already wealthy and you're already connected to other wealthy people, you can do that even more. So for example, you might find out that the price of oil is going to go up a little bit because of some circumstance. Well, and you might be the only person that knows that, right? But you're competing with other people. You could profit from that knowledge. But now let's say that that somebody else notices something that's maybe not the exact same thing, but it's related, and they decide not only are they going to buy oil futures, but they also know that they can short the insurance company that's likely to suffer a loss because this particular oil company really gets sloppy with safety procedures when there's a boom, right? Or they can buy shares in the company that transports the oil, right? They can buy a ship. So even if you're able to be in the right circumstance, unless you can fully take advantage of that knowledge, right? Unless you can reach out to all of these other circumstances that are tangential to the insight that you have, you're not going to be able to make as much money as somebody that can. and they're advantaged, right? Talked about this a little bit with the corruption, but there are many laws in place that make it illegal to compete with these folks, right? If you have a small software company and you can sell it to somebody that's already listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and usually that involves some degree of corruption, at least there's been big checks written to companies just to go through the process of putting you on the exchange. The revenue that you have as a small software company is at least 10 times more valuable once it's purchased by a big software company. That's a really weird circumstance, right? And the reason for that is that big companies that are already listed on the stock exchange, they get access to money much easier, right? If you're a normal person, you can't invest in a small software company, but you sure as heck can invest in Microsoft. So if Microsoft buys your company, that a little trickle of revenue is now worth 10 times more, roughly. And it's actually, it varies, but there's all kinds of things like that in play that put the big players that are politically connected when it comes to speculation in an advantaged position. Now, it doesn't mean you can't be successful, but it is a reality that you're going to have to accept. They're informed, right? They're informed because if they're good at this and they've been doing it for a while, they can go spend $10,000 to spend time with the Federal Reserve chair at a dinner, right? And the whole name of the game there is not that you really think that Bernanke or anybody else is particularly attractive. You're just hoping for one little sentence, one little nugget, one little indication of where the economy is going, because these guys control the economy to our detriment, right? But they do decide when we're going to have a boom and when we're going to have a bust. And so you're competing with people that are willing to pay for that knowledge. And that puts you at a disadvantage, because the more informed they are, the less informed you are, the less likely it is that you're going to predict the future and outcompete them. Okay, so at this point, you're probably asking yourself, is it impossible to speculate successfully? Maybe you should just completely focus on labor and leave speculation to other people. And if that's how you're feeling right now, and that's how you're thinking, that is exactly where you should be. It is very, very hard to make money through speculation. And I highly recommend that you do exactly what you're doing right now, maybe for hours instead of just moments. And that is something that I've been talking about and thinking about a lot lately. And that is just stare into the abyss, right? It is a really, it's a really difficult thing to do, to accept the universe as it is. But once you get kicked around for a while, you build up a little bit more willingness to do that. You slowly become more comfortable with the idea that things are not easy, and that that in a lot of ways it is a very, very brutal world out there, and you're not going to be able to you're not going to be able to be the special sunshine that you thought you were when you were 6 years old. So do that, right? Like when the course is over, go back to this point, this emotional state, and just consider how hard it is and how brutally difficult it is to be a speculator, to make money through speculation. And be informed that there's two other ways to do it. One is labor and the other is interest. And interest is basically not worth talking about. But labor isn't that bad, right? Labor is a wonderful way to make money. And we'll talk more about that that later. But let's finish out talking about speculation. So in order to be a good speculator, you have to do what they do, but better, right? And I'm not saying that you have to buy the $10,000 dinners at the Federal Reserve, but you have to know things that they don't. And there are ways that you can do that, but don't get into the game until you're ready, right? If you're going to do this, and I think that you should only do this if you accept how hard it is and you've built up some expertise, then get in, right? Because you can outcompete these people, right? There's nothing stopping you from putting in the work and understanding something that they don't understand and profiting from that. But don't take it lightly and don't do it until you are unstoppable, right? Until you have some claws and you have some teeth, and you are ready to tear some stuff up, just keep studying. Don't be afraid to stay in cash or other assets that shrink slowly. It's not comfortable, right? This is another staring into the abyss moment. There's nowhere for you to put your money, my friend. Like, you've earned it. You've worked hard for it. A lot of people are trying to take it from you, and there's no safe place to put it, because we live at a point in time where we have many blessings like MRI machines that are keeping us alive and all kinds of circumstances where otherwise we would be dead. But we do not have a sound money or a secure money. And because of that, we got to be comfortable with the idea that you're either going to be a speculator, which is something that requires a lot of specialization, or you're going to probably have to put your assets into things that shrink slowly if you're lucky. If you're in the United States and you can put your money into US dollars and they only shrink at 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6% per year, count your blessings, because there's a lot of places where you'd be lucky to have your money shrinking at 22% per year. Survival isn't easy, and in a world where there's no sound money, it's arguably much harder than it would be otherwise, for sure. So, but that's all right, because there have been a lot of people that have been very, very successful, right? Your doctor, your lawyer, these people probably have money, right? They're probably not unsuccessful. And yeah, if they can avoid getting screwed over by investing in some new scheme, they are going to be better off than if they try to be armchair speculators. It's the worst possible game to play without some specialty and without some focus. So take your hit, you know, maybe buy some real estate, have a nice house. You're going to get slaughtered every 7 or 8 years when the bust happens on real estate. It's not going to be a great investment, right? You're not going to become super wealthy by investing in houses. But if you only lose your wealth, if you only lose your savings at a few percent per year, you're doing great. And just be comfortable with that. If you want to become a speculator, don't forget that you have to understand something better than anybody else in the world, right? Do not invest in oil futures unless you understand in excruciating detail exactly why the price is going to do what you think it's going to do in a couple months or a couple days or a couple of years. So you have to specialize, and you have to really, really know what you're doing. And you also have to have enough wealth to put into play, right? If you know that that the oil price is going to change by a couple percent, if you have very little money, that knowledge doesn't matter to you much, right? Especially if you don't have a track record and you can't convince other people to risk their money based on your advice and give you a piece of it, right? That's another way to go. But generally, you have to have enough money of your own to risk and put into play. And it should be money that you can afford to lose, right? Because if you are one of the best speculators in the world, you've got a 53% chance of being successful on a typical move, right? 3% advantage over random chance with predicting the future of a price is outstanding. So you can't play the game when there's a 47% chance you're going to lose the money that you're investing with money you can't afford to lose. And that's why I think for the vast majority of people, they should just invest in education, right? Invest in education. And I don't mean like university education. That's probably the worst investment that you can make right now if you're in the United States. I mean, invest in understanding how the universe works, right? Invest in wisdom. If you get to a point where you really understand what's going on with coal mining or something like that, then that's the point where you step up and become a speculator. But go through that progression that I showed you on the slide earlier, where you become a good laborer and you take on more and more difficult tasks, and you help your friends and family take on more and more difficult tasks, because that makes the world a better place. And it also makes you more wealthy over time, right? So take the long game here. And if you wake up at some point and you're in a position to be a speculator, if you've mastered a subject and you know that you know it better than anybody else, yeah, take advantage of that. But don't feel like you have to be forced into that. If you're a school teacher and you just really want to teach kids, then be okay with having your wealth eaten away a little bit. And don't try to become a gambler, because that's not going to pay.